Chapter 13. Armbruster was glad he had chosen to follow from a distance. The idiots had gotten themselves involved in a three-way fight, surrounded on both sides by overwhelming forces, and there was no way he was getting involved in that. The hunter had begun to lose hope after the QRF platoon disappeared into District HQ, and after an hour or so without seeing a single soul he recognized posted to the walls, he decided to get some head down. The Corvid attack had petered out to a pathetic dribble, then a half-arsed retreat that saw many of the rabble cut down as they ran for their lives. That fortress. Whoever was crewing the damn thing knew how to fight. Its shields were probably powered directly from the base itself, and would no doubt have ammo for days. Attacking from that angle had been suicide, but Armbruster supposed it was preferable to attacking full strength via the fields of the agriculture facility. Without a covered approach, the Corvids would have been picked off by heavy artillery before they got within a mile of the place. No, if Armbruster was leading the assault, he would have split his forces and attacked at speed on two fronts, gambling that the fortress could only cover one approach without time to relocate. Oh well, he thought to himself as he saw the last remnants of the separatist attack chopped to mince as they fled. The point is now moot. After the attack, the hunter found himself a little nest in a gutted habitation block no more than a half mile from District, just before the rise of the valley that led into the necropolis. He figured that if they were ever to come out again, they'd be heading for Central. There was nowhere else he could think of that would be worth the effort of leaving that safe little hidey hole. Hunched down inside the building that had been occupied by civilians just hours before, Armbruster set his sensor array to passive mode and promptly fell asleep. Movement. A low beeping, accompanied by a flashing point on his display, one that matched a friendly heavy unit. He could track a Toro's engine signature from over a mile, and he picked up a faint report now, one that pointed him to a concealed railway track that seemed to emerge from nowhere amidst the floor of the necropolis. Armbruster activated all of his systems, slow time, as he was in no rush. He watched the levels on his gauges rise as he brought the hunter out of its slumber. Railgun plates warmed, and the 8mm machine gun swiveled lazily on its turret, slave to the watchful gaze of its owner. Armbruster relieved himself, took a sip from his hydration tube, then flexed his hands and wrapped them around his control levers. With a thought, he brought the Buckmaster-class mech into a standing position and started to walk. Multiple scanner pings. He froze. Units, more than he could have ever anticipated. Uneven engine notes betraying the poorly maintained nature so typical of the Separatists. His attention had been focused forward, meaning scanners would not sense anything rearward until it was on top of him. Stupid. He should have centralized the scanner position and checked his surroundings before committing to movement. Bikes raced past his hide location, followed by trucks, tanks, half-tracks, and several improvised behemoths, seemingly brought to life by throwing several other vehicles together. Armbruster felt a thrill as the enemy passed, no more than 10 yards from where he stood, holding his breath in the darkness. He allowed himself a wide grin. Only a thin wall of cheap concrete separated him from certain death. All it would take was for a single observant person to really look into the building as they passed, and he would be forced to fight till he fell. The ground rumbled with vibration from the strike force as it drove on with singular intent, looking as though it was homing in on his former comrades. That isn't possible, the specialist thought. Even Toros don't possess the kind of sensor package I have. Either the Corvids had their own hunters to call upon, or were about to have themselves a fortunate accident. Armbruster gave it a minute or so after the last of the Corvid force had rumbled past, then carefully exited the building. He crested the valley edge and dropped down in the wake of the formidable task force. He'd follow them to a point, then split off to a flank and lose himself among the ruins of the past. The hunter picked its way through the industrial chaos of the necropolis with an ease that betrayed its 20-foot-high frame. Armbruster had followed up behind a light tank, using the path it ground out to make his own ingress easier, before breaking off to the right several hundred yards short of the fight. For most of his ascent he kept close to the tank, too close, taking delight in the Corvid's ignorance as he trained his railgun on the throbbing exhaust ports. "Notice me," he dared the tank crew, wondering if any of them had the basic sense to check their 6 o'clock position periodically. Give me an excuse. The stalk was uneventful, and the hunter dipped his head to the vehicle as it grunted its way up the slope, battering prefabs and burial mounds out of the way in a relentless slog. On his own, Armbruster accelerated, skillfully picking his route, each footfall of the Buckmaster class finding the flattest ground, the more stable surface, as he circled around a factory building that leaned at an alarming angle. He skirted the edge of the chaos, noting with curiosity a pile of civilian corpses that were drawing a swarm of flies, until he happened across a smaller warehouse, nestled in under a cluster of prefab towers. The pile of bodies was denied dignity even in death, as combat was joined by several parties, and the whole mound bucked and jumped under a flurry of impacts, individuals breaking apart under the assault. The hunter ducked his engine slightly to get under the roof of the prefab tower and pushed through to the forward edge, gingerly digging a hole through the wall with one clawed foot. Pawing at the construct without toppling over took a great deal of concentration, and after a mere few seconds he had to wipe beads of sweat from his brow. Balancing on a single leg was seriously advanced piloting skills, and Armbruster congratulated himself as he peered through his murder hole, eyes lighting up as the scene unfolded. Eddie, that great machine piloted by old Steady Eddie herself, was in the process of standing up. Its legs flailed around as the upper carapace scraped along the ground in the most undignified way, and Armbruster burst into laughter. How absurd these people were. Turning on them had been the right choice. How he had ever seen himself as a peer to these incompetents he could barely fathom, and Armbruster felt himself wondering how he would fit in among the corporate forces that no doubt were on their way. He could barely imagine the fantastical tech they'd bring with them, tech that would augment him, make him a better warrior. He patted his diagnostic board as he thought about leaving the hunter behind, and an unfamiliar feeling of sentimentality washed over him. There weren't many things he would miss, but the machine was one of them. It's a shame that Almeida had to die, Armbruster thought, a frown creasing his brow. But he had too many principles. It would have taken too long to convince him to join the corporation, and they only had a limited window to seize the initiative. No, it's much better this way. He had to die. Oh, what have we here? The pilot mumbled to himself, as dozens of brightly coloured spherical robots started throwing themselves at the army platoon. They seemed to be a kind of suicide unit, filled with high explosives, sacrificing themselves to take out their enemies. Armbruster was fascinated. Drones. He had heard of them being used during the Troubles, but the archive footage of army drones showed big, cumbersome things that needed to be protected on their flight, otherwise they'd be blown out of the air before nearing their objectives. They were a world apart from these nimble little things. The drones terminated two MOGs before their attention was drawn elsewhere. The drivers were utterly powerless to halt their demise as they poured fire into the swarm with negligible effect, and as a group they flew through the sky in a bounding arc before Armbruster lost them behind the factory building. Very clever. Kill the enemy without any risk to yourself. Eddie had been motionless for some time, obviously experiencing locomotive problems, as one leg jutted out at an awkward angle. There was a reason nobody tested self-righting units. Armbruster caught a little movement, an increased gain on his forward monitor, as a tiny figure appeared on Eddie's upper carapace. There she was, his illustrious former leader, boring as mud and about as equally as inspiring. Captain Blake hit the deck as she was buzzed by a group of A-Gravs, painted the same red as the suicide drones, and clearly designed along the same lines. The larger flying machines disappeared from view, and Blake picked herself up, before beginning to descend Eddie's access ladder. She cautiously took it a rung at a time, stopping each time to look down and make sure the thing wouldn't break underneath her. It was painful to watch. "Get on with it, woman!" Armbruster yelled in his cockpit, stroking the trigger and sending a burst of 8mm rounds her way. He saw the impact spark in a line, no more than a foot away from the captain, who paused, then promptly fell to the decking below. Oh shit, did I hit her? He didn't mean to hit her. He didn't want the game to end just yet. Armbruster scanned around, couldn't make out Blake's form for a minute. Then there she was, inspecting the leg joint that still sat immobile, gleaming hydraulic ram contrasting starkly with the drab and damaged exterior of Eddie's armour. A HE shell burst against Eddie's unshielded flank, and he lost sight of her again as smoke rolled out from the centre of the blast. It wafted past quickly, and the officer just sat there dumbly, probably shocked at yet another near miss. Armbruster triggered another burst of MG fire, raking the area around the captain in an attempt to snap her out of her stupor. She flinched, and one arm flopped down to the side, where just before it had been gripping the ladder tightly. Oops! He looked hard through maximum gain, and saw a darker patch on her uniform. Yeah, definitely hit her that time. It really needed to stop doing that. Blake seemed to barely pay attention to her wound, as the slight woman leapt up and down on whatever was obstructing the leg joint. After the third attempt, she pulled herself against the ladder and looped her good arm round the rung as something in Eddie shifted. The offending leg shot back into its joint with force, pulling the entire machine laterally, and Blake held on for dear life. It settled, and she immediately began the laborious climb back to her cockpit, made punishingly hard by her wounded limb. Arm up, 1 foot, push, second foot, start again. Armbruster found himself willing her on, letting out a little cheer every time she advanced a rung. That was some dogged determination she was showing. Still, she wouldn't have to do it if the silly bitch hadn't fallen over in the first place. Finally, looking exhausted and trailing blood, the captain dragged herself over the edge of Eddie's upper glacis and disappeared into her hatch. It closed slowly, and Eddie shook. Hard shields rippled, luminous waves of blue overlapping as they warded off kinetic impacts. And Brewster was happy for her, happy for himself. The game would continue, for how long he couldn't tell, but he would be grateful for every moment experienced. After all, he needed something to keep him occupied until the corporation showed up, and taking out his own unit had proven to be mostly unchallenging so far. Deciding he was bored of the quiet, Armbruster switched his radio on and quickly found the channels that the QRF platoon were operating on. He looked at his map board and hastily traced a route. The hunter knew exactly what Blake would do next, and he wanted to be able to hear it. In this terrain, it would be glorious.